Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
All right, well, it's Tuesdays, and the best half hour of the week is always with the incredible Neil Coolong. Sir, welcome.
As always, it was great to be here. I can't believe I came into a conversation with so much Chad Johnson hate.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, he was a little bit better player than he's giving credit for, but he's one of those guys that did not. Yeah, okay, but was one of those guys that did not want to, quote, blow his money. He was made his money, and he made sure that he kept it.
What I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but it fits right in line with that. There was a stretch of time his rookie year, after he got drafted, probably before training camp, instead of getting a place to live, he lived at the stadium to save money.
Yeah, right.
You hear stuff like that. It's always consistent, though. You don't want to call him cheap, per se, but that's kind of what the impression that you got from him. But he was very tight with his money. He was very responsible. I just think that's the funniest thing, considering the persona that he built up and the animosity, the heat that he created. I found him just endlessly hilarious. He was just such a strange guy. I got a big kick out of him.
I would go with frugal.
Frugal. It's a nice word.
That's a nice word that Maddie wouldn't use because, I mean, when he's on a hate roll, no. All right, so last night's work of art. Stick figures are art too, aren't they?
And that's excellent. I wish I had that last night. That's exactly how I would have described it. Art is a wide umbrella, you know. Games, I guess, can be described similarly. That was a memorable train wreck. And the thing of it was, each team, they mirrored each other, you know. Obviously, Steelers fans are largely upset over everything that was going on, but it was as if Cleveland kept them in the match the whole way, you know, trying to sell the bit that these were two teams capable of winning in the NFL. They both played very poorly in many instances, to a point where we saw another entry into the contest of determining what Kenny Pickett's worst game as a pro is. And I'm not sure he was even the worst quarterback on the field.
No, he was not. He was the better quarterback. Yep.
That says absolutely nothing. Except Cleveland has invested a lot of money into the wrong guy. Wow. I you know, Steve, I don't think he's coming back. I remember talking about this with you last year. Yeah. I was willing to give him a little bit, you know, for rust, getting the feel for the offense, his teammates, everything like that. But he moved like an athlete twice as old as he was. We saw some glimpses of his arm, but I walked away from that thinking he's one of the quarterbacks that's a year or two removed physically from playing anymore. You know, the end of the Matt Ryan era, Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, to an extent, Tom Brady, certainly Peyton Manning, their physical traits were gone by the end. They existed on their experience and their guile more than anything. Watson did not have any guile last night. He should have been thrown out of the game at one point. It's not often that you see a quarterback that can't run being asked to run multiple times and ending each of those runs with an egregious face mask penalty.
Yeah,
only two of which he got called for. And then to engage the Steelers' sideline after the play in a game that his team, they were winning at that point.
Yeah,
and then to shove the official, which I said at the time, I mean, I don't know how you get away with it. You're going to have to throw him out. Right. You know, it was so obvious in front of a national audience. It was all they could do to not throw him out. that might not have been the worst part of his game either. I mean, he had some really poor decisions. It was clear that they were not going to attempt to throw the ball deep down the field. When they lost Nick Chubb, which in and of itself was an awful scene for such a great player, their offense completely collapsed, and they still had a running back. Their backup running back, I think, was still better than the Steelers' running backs were, and they were productive. They could still move the ball, but every key situation, as Mike Tomlin would say, every weighty down, it seemed like they were begging Deshaun Watson to do something, and he refused to do anything with it. And more than anything, that's why Cleveland lost this game as opposed to Pittsburgh winning it. Steelers get the win. Neither team walks out of that feeling real good about what they just saw or how they just performed. That was really bad. Even for week two, that was really bad.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've become so spoiled over the years at looking at the longevity of Tom Brady, the longevity of Aaron Rodgers. And there's a list of guys where older quarterbacks in this league have performed very well. And then you see Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson, and we're seeing shelf life before our very eyes in two franchises that didn't see it, and they're going to get burned by it.
To varying levels of catastrophic mistake. I mean, from Denver's end, I didn't think it was a great move, all things considered. But yes, it was a move that you could see that they had to make. It's a gamble that they had to make. I don't think Cleveland needed to do that. And that this is the most hindsight is 2020 statement of all time. But only an owner willing to take an uneducated, significant risk would do everything that they did. Let's keep in mind there are three components to the Deshaun Watson move. One, everything that he was accused of. We'll call it an accusation, but there are 53 guys plus the coaches in the locker room. They have wives, sisters, daughters, mothers. You're dividing your locker room when you bring in a player like that, plain and simple. If you're willing to accept that, okay, but that's what you're doing. Two, you traded a generation's worth of draft picks to acquire that locker room distraction. So you're all in. This is Cortez burning the ships when he reached the new land. There's nothing you're going to be able to do to get out of it. And to put the kicker on top of it, let's give him the biggest contract of all time, the least movable and the least cuttable contract in NFL history, which means, regardless of anything, this guy is strapped to your team until it is extremely painful to cut him in year four. It's physically impossible to do so until then. They would have the gross domestic product of Cuba in cap hits if they cut him. They couldn't field a team if they were to cut him. They're strapped to him for this season plus another two before it's kind of okay to get rid of him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit okay. And he's playing right now like he's 45 years old. So there are dark things coming for Cleveland, a team that really made this move with the idea in mind that we have one of the best, most balanced rosters in the NFL. And that was true. You have Nick Chubb. You have Myles Garrett. I continue to be more than impressed with their secondary, the way that they've added to that. Denzel Ward is a phenomenal player, played really well last night. Za'Darius Smith, great free agent acquisition. They have a smart front office. They just can't seem to put this together, and it's hard to get past the fact that your quarterbacks over the last 17-plus two games have been a combination of Jacoby Brissett and Deshaun Watson's ghost. There's nothing left for them to get except for this position, and it's the one position they're not going to be able to fill for quite a while in a meaningful way. I mean, they're not going to draft somebody. Kevin Stefanski, if he doesn't make this work, unfortunately for him, he's probably looking for a new opportunity, and that might be good for him because I don't think there is a coach right now that's going to get more out of Deshaun Watson than what we're seeing. Because physically, I don't think he has it anymore.
Yeah, agreed. Conversely, let's get to Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett was the better of the two quarterbacks last night after a 50% performance. At some point, something has either got to kick in or this is it. What are you seeing in Kenny Pickett right now, and where do you think the tipping point is for him?
Mechanically, he's all over the board.
Yeah.
He doesn't look, you know, it's the old golf adage. Your swing looks like you're unfolding a lawn chair. That's kind of what it looks like right now with Pickett throwing the ball. There are times that his arm is moving way faster than his hips. His feet are not in the right place. His shoulders aren't in the right place. He's mechanically very flawed. And I think, to me, and I'm not a quarterback's coach, just watching the guy. I watched the game last night. I watched it again today, specifically looking at Pickett to try to see what we can glean from it. He's forcing the ball. He's throwing much harder than he probably has to, you know. Also the old adage, don't aim, throw. Well, Pickett is just throwing. There's no touch to what he's doing. And they are failing so quickly into every series. He's put into very difficult downs often. Go back and look at the one successful play, that the post that they ran to George Pickens that he took for 71 yards. The one play where Cleveland's defense just completely fell asleep. miscommunication there. Pickens was wide open in the middle of the field when he caught that ball, and every Browns defender was stopped when he got it. Clear path the whole way. Pickett saw that when he dropped back. He saw where he was going with the ball. He stood and he delivered, and he threw a catchable ball. It's a nice NFL throw. But he only threw three or four passes that were quality last night. He missed behind receivers again quite a bit. Didn't have a whole lot of touch on shorter stuff. There were a couple screen passes that had absolutely no chance of being completed. This is the point where we inject the everyone's favorite coordinator, Matt Canada, into the mix. There's not a whole lot that you can do in the game to fix a quarterback's mechanics. It's mentally, he's out of it. I first and foremost, you offer that up. Play calling is secondary to execution. That's the way the game works. But you're going to have to find out a way to manufacture something, because while the play calling itself is not something I'm putting at the top of the list, it absolutely is a concern, just not as much as the overall direction and the overall coordination of an offense that is, reasonably speaking, one of the 3 to 5 worst in the NFL. And this is the second time they've started off not just poorly, but among the worst in the league. And that's not hyperbole. That's really where they are right now. And I think covering the Steelers, watching the Steelers, we should be used to this. But that's not really the way that you want to go after an optimistic offseason, some good execution from the preseason. They're nowhere close to competitive with what they have. And just like last year, after two games, they're really lucky to be 1-1. By all rights, I would say normally any other season you're 0-2, but apparently not this year or last year. So they're able to pull something out of that consistently. It's just going to take that level of failure from your opponent and last year from Cincinnati in order to win games. You're not going to be around long, and it makes the second half of your season that much harder. And it just seems like this is the same thing over and over again. Something's got to give, and it would be reasonable. I don't remember the last time they dismissed a coordinator in the middle of the season. I know that Mike Tomlin has not done that in his tenure. This to me looks like a situation which that has to be considered at this point.
Yeah, Kenny Pickett, when he throws it, he's hoping to make a play. Okay, big time quarterbacks are up there, and they're looking to make a play, not hoping. They're looking to make a play. That's a big difference. Defensively, though, Watt, Highsmith, big nights last night. Watt's always really, really good. Is it hard for you to tell where the Steelers' defense is? Because against San Francisco, they were eh, and last night it was Cleveland with Deshaun Watson.
You got to keep in mind, Cleveland did that with Deshaun Watson and two running backs who carved them up. A-gap, B-gap contain was a mess. Some of that you're going to put on the absence of a great player like Cam Hayward, but it's not as if we didn't see that in week one either. They're in trouble up front. The defensive line is not moving the direction that I thought that they would be at this point of the year. And I would have said this before. In fact, I did last week, and there were obviously a rash of injuries. But if we were to consider the value coming, a value of contribution coming from the player added with the gap between that player and their backup, I would argue the three most valuable players in the team are Cam Hayward, Diontae Johnson, and Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Hayward and Johnson did not play. Fitzpatrick went down with a pretty kind of scary, weird type of injury.
Right.
They won a game without those three players involved. And the fact that you needed Watson to make a critical mistake, you needed the athleticism of Highsmith and Watt, players that combined outscored your entire offense last night. For the Steelers to win that with a really rough secondary, if Minkah is not in there, they're not in very good shape. Levi Wallace, to this point, and I'm piling on, I know, but Levi Wallace might be the worst defender I've seen in football this season.
He's not good.
He's really rough. I don't think he's physically up to the job. Patrick Peterson he's going to get targeted a few more times. Let's just say that. I think he could have flagged Joey Porter for that at the end. They're in trouble defensively, and it's not going to get better. I mean, I don't know exactly what Minkah's situation is going to be moving forward. Tomlin kind of couched it, saying he's in the building. They think he's okay. We'll see on a shorter week what he's able to do. But if he's not in there and he's not 100%, you're without Hayward for a while. They're in trouble. Those corners are really not up to the average level that you hoped that they would be. And, the good news is they can't stop the run either. So they're going to have a tough hill to climb here the next couple games at least.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And what's interesting is that what could really help Kenny Pickett out, what could help him out, is a running game, and they don't have it because they don't block it well enough.
I'm not sure what happened in the setup for this season. We're seeing worse offensive line play than we saw last year when it was a major problem. We are seeing worse running back play when the narrative was Najee Harris is hurt. That's why he's not explosive. There was a play, two of them, last night in which fans were screaming up and down, including, I won't name names, but including a former professional offensive lineman complaining about the amount of sweeps that they were running to Najee Harris. They weren't sweeps. They were inside zone plays that Najee Harris, for some reason, ran horizontally toward the sideline. That's a major problem. Like, your feature running back, his vision is so cut off, he is turning his shoulders completely west and running toward the sideline during a play. Nothing is going to destroy a zone run more than that. Nothing is going to destroy your ability to gain yards than that. I'm not letting the offensive line off the hook. They have not been tough up front. It seems like they're getting off the ball slowly, and it seems like they're not anchored, they're not strong at the point of attack, and they're getting pushed back. Now, they are playing two very good defensive fronts, so not that that lets them off the hook. It just shows that maybe they're not going to be this bad compared to average. But Harris, the lack of vision that he continues to show on a game-to-game basis is a big concern, to a point where it's not like Jaylen Warren made hay all day either, but you can't watch yesterday's game and say that Jaylen Warren is worse than Najee Harris. You can't. Objectively speaking, in a vacuum, take away all the hype, Harris is the bigger player. He should be the better runner,
yep.
but he's not. So at the end of the day, you've got a multitude of problems with your running game that mirror the exact problems that you had last year with largely the same personnel. So what happens? You spend a bunch of money. You improved considerably last year over the second half of the year, and now you've taken a full, if not step and a half, backwards. That the all roads lead back to Canada, I guess, because ultimately it's under the coordinator to have had these issues addressed. It seems like it's a bigger problem than it was at this point last year.
Well, there are more exciting offenses in Canada right now. All right, so thanks so much, Neil. As always, appreciate you, my friend. Tuesdays with Neil, always the best.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.